CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, as usual, Lionel Makokotlela. Welcome, Lions.
Dumela, Gary, and dumela to our listeners. And today's show is going to be quite a lit one.
Last week, Lions, you recall, for the first time, we teamed up with Legal Talk South Africa.
Yes.
And if you haven't heard of Legal Talk, it's a webpage that has tens of thousands of people on their Facebook page. So it's linked, the web and the Facebook. Hundreds of these people, in fact nearly thousands, are posting legal questions one after the other. And the stream of questions flow thick and fast, and by the time you've read one, two more appear to take its place.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly from this, there's a need for regular South Africans to get more legal knowledge and input. And yeah, some of these questions posted require a more detailed response. So Legal Talk SA and I have got together, and we're going to deal with some of the detail, the questions that require the detailed answers. So that's why we've linked up with Legal Talk. We're going to take the questions off their Facebook page, and we're going to answer them today. That's will enable us to expand on all these questions. Last week, Lange, you'll recall we dealt with some of your concerns relating to consumer issues.
Certainly.
And the Consumer Protection Act. It was a fabulous show, if I can use that word. If you missed that one, please listen to the podcast of last week. If you're interested in the CPA, Consumer Protection Act, and how you can be protected, we covered a myriad of issues on that one.
Certainly, yeah.
It's a goodie, so please have a listen to that podcast.
That's
cool. Now, today we've picked, because, I'm going to tell you what we picked, but because there's been such an
influx.
Influx of questions, yeah. You're right, Lines. Property law matters.
Oh, yes.
Issues on property law, landlord and tenant, that kind of stuff.
Ooh, hey.
Joining me today is an attorney called Guillaume Earl, who Legal Talk South Africa recommended that we bring on board for this show. Welcome to you, Guillaume.
Thank you very much.
Please spell your first name for us. It's quite a neat spelling with a different pronunciation. French.
French.
Yeah. How do you spell it?
It's G-U-I-L-L-A-U-M-E.
Pronounce Guillaume.
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 That's French.
Okay. Guillaume Earl. Cool. Welcome to you. We're going to tackle you on property issues, and I tell you why you've been recommended by Legal Talk. You're an attorney, but you also got an estate agency business.
Yes, that's correct.
So you see it from both sides. You don't only see the legal side, you see the practical side. Very often, what we're looking for is the practical answers.
True.
You know, it's all very well telling a guy section so-and-so says you can go to court, but that's not necessarily what the public want.
True.
They want to know, how do I deal with this practically? So we're pleased to have you on board with us.
That's nice. To be here. Thanks.
Cool. Our email address, law@cliffcentral.com. Please look at our Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. Lines, our Twitter handle.
It's at Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W. Or you can actually send us a WhatsApp note on 079-748-2090. That's 079-748-2090.
To our Cliff Central listeners, our very... what are their lines? They tune in week after week and listen
down
to our podcasters. Please join with us today. We include you in this one, even though we're answering the Legal Talk questions. These will apply to all. Please send us your questions. You can also phone in or WhatsApp us. We can we can give you a number as well.
True.
Yeah.
But I think the WhatsApp would be far much better, and you can actually give us any information in so far as other topics that you would ask you would want us to actually tackle, maybe criminal, because that's actually second highest that people are actually asking to wanting to know something of that related area.
Yeah, I think this collaboration between Legal Talk SA and Cliff Central is a good one, and I think we can build on this. So good luck to all of us. Our first question comes in Afrikaans.
Wow.
Ek wil net iets vra. This comes from Amelia. Ek wil net iets vra. Mag die landlord inkom in ons plek? Hy wil foto's neem en inspecties neem sonder my toestemming. Can a landlord just rock up and take pictures of your place and sure. Without your permission? Guillaume, what's the answer to that one? The landlord, yeah.
My answer would be if it's not arranged prior, no. And it has to be mentioned in the contract which time periods that he has to go and look. Every 3 months, every 6 months, make a prior arrangement. As opposed to just pitching up and saying, listen, I'm inspecting your property now.
You know, this sounds so simple. I mean, there should be a simple answer to this. Let's take what Janine said on the very topic. She says, just because it's someone else's property, says Janine, does not give them the right to enter when they feel like it. That's trespassing, she says. We unfortunately had a few issues like this with the owner of the unit we reside in. The police said he may not enter at his tuning. At his choosing, only if it's on fire, then the landlord could come. There's been tons of answers on this one, tons of different views. Lindy Janssen van Rensburg gives a good one. She says, in Afrikaans, the owner must arrange a time with you for the inspection. They can't just roll in when it suits them, as you rightly say. And they may take photos as long as it doesn't really impinge on your privacy. Now, why would the landlord want to take photos? I suppose if the place has been damaged, it's his property. And Guillaume, you're right. I guess he's entitled to come at reasonable times to inspect his property.
Well, he has to minimize his risk.
Yeah.
The owner. If he goes every 3 months and there's a problem, he can fix it. He's minimizing his risk. He's making sure his tenants are happy.
I think there's one point that's made that we must stress is that the landlord can't arrive at any old time.
No, not at all.
He's got to call you and he's got to make a time that suits you as well. And specifically, I mean, he can't come at supper time or when the kids are around needing to be bathed or whatever it may be. Mm. So by arrangement, I think this can be done, but it's got to be done at suitable times, yeah. And not too often either.
The problem there is, I think it should be stipulated in the contract, personally. If you have a good attorney or a good rental agreement,
yes,
it should state that the landlord is entitled to come and inspect your property every now and again. He can decide on the timelines. And then he has to arrange a time with you to come and inspect it.
You talk of a good lease. Going to a lawyer for a lease, which they kind of pull off their computers, can cost you a few thousand. If you don't want to use that and you're a landlord, what kind of lease? What do you suggest people do?
Well, you can buy it from these B&A and CNA stores, which I do not recommend. Good lawyer. It's always a good option. If not, there's a nice one on the Legal Talk SA page.
That's good advice.
That you can go and download.
Okay. So if I don't have an attorney or I don't want to spend the money, go to Legal Talk SA's website. I didn't know it was there. It is there.
We have a lot of documentation there. We even have spoliation documentation that's available there.
Mm. Lines,
do they come in different languages? Let's say I'm Sotho and I'm in Tembisa, I'm renting out a room. Can I get one maybe translated in a different vernacular?
Unless you're going to translate it, I doubt you're going to find it that easily.
Lines. I don't think my Google Translate skills are going to work there.
Okay. Yeah. So there's still a room for that market then, because a lot of tenants actually move to Tembisa because their rental monthly rental that side, it's actually cheaper compared to going to Kempton Park, for example.
Yeah.
Mm. You make a very good point. Mm.
Okay.
It is something we should look at, I think, in future. With all our languages, make sure we have a fairly decent contract.
Yeah.
And I think attorneys' firms must maybe look into it.
You know, the problem is that you're taking these standard contracts that don't always completely apply to you and your tenant and your premises, and you're using it, whereas in fact they should be specifically drafted for your circumstances. I know it sounds a bit silly that, but that's the way I see it, and that's why you should get some kind of legal advice. The Law Society does push that people use attorneys because there's a move away from it. And I agree with that, except the expense of it. So maybe you could take a standard lease and go to an attorney for the drafting of specific clauses that you want in, for such as, here we go, Bridget wants to know, as a landlord, if you're renting out a property with a pool, are you required to put a pool net on it?
We discussed this just now, and I said my opinion is yes, because the municipal bylaw says yes. And my argument for this is, what if a toddler climbs over your wall, for example? It's a stupid example, but what if? And that child drowns. The responsibility is on you. So I would say, because the bylaws state this, that the onus is on the owner to provide the pool with a pool net.
What happens if I don't want to go to the expense of providing... There's two issues here. Landlord, I don't want to go to the expense of providing a pool net. I tell you, as prospective tenant, listen, there is no pool net. You have kids. If not, it's your decision or whatever. It's your decision as to whether you want to take the property or not. I'm not putting in a net.
Yeah, well, then exclude it on the rental agreement.
So then you've got to make specific reference in your lease.
Yes.
There is no pool net, and the tenant agrees that there's no obligation on the landlord to do so.
No, he takes
it
the
is
risk.
His obligation.
No, he has to take the risk.
On that very note, if somebody climbs over the wall and drowns in your pool, they weren't allowed to be there in the first place, I guess.
Yeah, that's going to be a bit of a problem.
Yeah, you mean a kid could jump over. I think what the... I may be wrong, and I say this very hesitantly, but I think what the bylaws mean is that when they say the owner, I think the person that's in control of that property, surely. I mean, if I'm the owner and I live overseas and some agent is renting out my property, are you saying that I'm liable because there's no net on it? Does a net?
Argue.
I mean, I haven't seen the bylaws, and I bow to your knowledge, but if there is if the property's not rented, am I obliged to have a net over it? No, you're shaking your head. You're not sure. What about the creepy crawly? Whose obligation is that if it breaks down?
A creepy is a thing that breaks down easily. So I would say that's for the tenant's pocket. Creepy crawlies and chemicals will be for the tenant's pocket.
Why do you say that?
Those are things that you have to look after. It's not fixed. You have to make sure the pipes are not clogged, make sure everything is connected correctly. You'll never have a problem.
If the creepy crawly breaks down, whose obligation, if there's nothing in the lease, whose obligation is it to replace it or repair it?
I would say the tenant.
As opposed to the geezer, what happens if that breaks down?
That should be the owner.
The difference being between the two is that you're saying the geezer is fixed.
It's fixed.
Yeah.
And it's insured, I think. And the insurance mostly deals with it.
Mm. Automatic garage doors, they break down. Mine does occasionally.
And mine does all the time.
Yeah.
It's wear and tear.
Yeah, you have to look after it. If you did look after it and it breaks, then...
So whose obligation, landlord or tenant, if there's no...
Landlord.
Landlord's obligation... Say. That's why we say to people, these little things are the things that cause the most aggravation between landlord and tenant. These creepies, the garage doors, all those kind of things. You've got to provide for that and think about it before you take occupation.
Mm. Oh, that's why we say go and see a good attorney. Let him help you draft it. It's not that expensive. The money you're going to spend by not having a good contract is going to outweigh the money you're going to spend on... just fixing a creepy, for example.
Okay. Jacqueline wants to know, we evicted a squatter from hell that stopped paying, but now we're sitting with the estate agent from hell.
Oh, fun.
The estate agent placed the squatter the non-paying tenant in the house and didn't do background checks and placed someone in our property who had a history of evictions. So now you are an estate agent and a lawyer. Question is, what is your obligation as an estate agent?
You, as an estate agent, have to make sure that your tenants can afford the place they move into, number one. The basic calculation, as we discussed, is your rental amount should be your salary should be 3 times the amount of your rental. So if you rent for 10,000 rand, your salary should be 30,000 rand.
Is that before or after tax?
Before tax.
Before tax. Okay. So I'm all right. So to rent for 10,000, I've got to earn like 40,000, 45,000 or somewhere around there.
Yeah, that's the gliding scale they work on. So that's the onus is on the estate agent to make sure that that is done. The onus is also on the estate agent to make sure that he has done the correct credit checks.
How do you do that?
The tenants sign a consent, so we can get normal credit checks to see if they. How they pay their bills.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's a system called TPN.
Yeah, TPN, that's for property people only.
Yes.
Yes. What does that show as opposed to the normal credit bureau report?
There's nothing in there about credit per se. What you can see is the behavior of that specific tenant over the last few years. Because they register that tenant on TPN. So you can see where he leased, how long he leased, did he pay, did he not pay, is there a judgment against him, has he been evicted. So that whole TPN system you can utilize to see what the behavior of that tenant is or will be in future.
Okay, you as a state agent, I mean a lot of people are renting on their own, they advertise all over the place. What do people pay an estate agent as a commission for rental or a fee?
Well, I'm going to talk about mine. What we do with rentals is we take the first month's rent as commission. So that is the fee that we charge, and that's it.
And for that, they get all these checks in there?
Yeah, that's part of the job. We have to do due diligence.
If people are doing it on their own, they won't get onto TPN unless they come to someone like you and say, can I pay you for a TPN search?
Yeah, well, it's going to cost them $80. And they're more than welcome to contact us.
Okay, so if I want to rent my own property without using an agent and give away the first month's rent, I'll come to you, pay $80 for the search. I can also do a credit search. I can do that. You can help me with that as well.
Yeah, all we need is the ID book
and
a consent form that says you consent to us doing a ITC check for you. That's basic. That's all we need. And we'll have your ITC report within the minute.
What about sureties? Is that something that we should consider more as landlords?
Well, I love sureties in general. If I could, with all rental agreements, I would add a surety. It covers the landlord.
What is the response when you say to a prospective tenant, hey, I want you to bring me a surety. I want your dad or your brother, your uncle, whatever to sign. What do they say?
With us, it's quite successful. We have about 80% or so where they will sign, and then the other 20% will say no, sorry.
When you talk of the 80% that will sign, are these students or are they elderly or whatever? Is it across the board or is it confined really?
Let's say students, elderly, and first-time job seekers, for example. That's about where it ends.
The surety provides that if the tenant doesn't pay, then the surety will pay.
Yep.
Which a landlord really needs, and they don't often think about this. They don't consider it.
Yeah, you have to cover yourself, and you have to cover your client. So you need to think about this.
Yeah.
And if you need to recover funds at some stage, and if you can't get it from the tenant, then you can get it from the father or the mother.
The question is it a buyer's market, or is it a renter's market, or a landlord's market right now? I mean, can the tenant say, listen, I'm not going to get you a surety and I'll go somewhere else? Is there a glut of space or is there a shortage? What's going on out
there? In Joburg, there's a bit of a shortage at the moment, so you take what you get.
So you can call the shots as a landlord and say, I want a surety. Lines, how do you feel? How would you feel if you were asked for a surety?
I personally wouldn't agree to it, because I just feel that if then I do something, they need to really get on with me as opposed to asking my mother or my brother to actually pay on my behalf.
Well, Guillaume says he's getting an 80% response rate, which is good.
No, that's brilliant.
Acceptance rate,
Oh, we need to cover our tracks.
There's a question here that flows really from what I've just been talking about. It comes from Janine. She says, if an estate agency has an invalid Fidelity Fund certificate, as per the Estate Agency Affairs Board, may they continue selling property and renting it out? Thanks, Janine. Yeah.
This is something that we deal with every single day.
Yeah.
There are thousands of estate agents that do not have Fidelity Fund certificates.
What is it, a Fidelity Fund certificate exactly?
Well, they also have trust accounts, like attorneys do. Yeah. So that Fidelity Fund certificate is supposed to cover the money in your trust account or to...
So if you run away, at least the Fidelity Fund covers that.
Yeah.
Strictly, if you don't have a Fidelity Fund, what are you saying? That you can't trade?
You can't trade. If you look at... There is a section in the Estate Agency Affairs Act, Section 34, that specifically states if you do not have a valid Fidelity Fund certificate, it's a criminal offence. You can be charged or imprisoned for 5 years, or they can give you a fine for 5,000 rand, or both.
Yes.
So I would not suggest practicing without a
Fidelity
Fund.
How do you find out if an estate agent has a Fidelity Fund? Is it just a matter of saying, do you, or can you check it out?
It's very easy. You go onto the EAAB's website, and you go and search for the estate agents. The names pop up, and they literally tell you, this one is valid, this one is invalid, this one is valid. It's very, very easy to see.
Just for our listeners, if you have a problem with estate agents, there's a whistleblowers hotline, which you can find on the Estate Agency Affairs Board. And it's available for reporting any foul play, they call it, F-O-U-L, that you are aware of regarding trust monies, irregular transactions, and so on. So you remain completely anonymous when reporting these irregularities, and please do so if there is something that's untoward. Please report it. We don't want skellums around that are doing wrong things. Mm-hmm. Am I right, Gulam? Yeah, makes sense. Another one here on property transfer. Shannon wants to know, can one request my lawyer when selling and buying a property, or whose right is it to choose the conveyancing lawyer?
Across South Africa, everywhere, it's the seller gets to choose, except in KwaZulu-Natal. There, the purchaser gets to choose.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Why? I do not know, but that's apparently it's common law. Yeah. But KwaZulu-Natal, purchaser, the rest of the country, the seller, they get to decide.
Assuming that I insist as a buyer, say I want my lawyer, well, that's by agreement. The seller can say there's no deal if you insist. Can you get your lawyer to supervise the transfer?
Yeah, of course you can.
Yeah. So there's the conveyancing lawyer, and then you can get another lawyer to make sure everything's done properly.
There's a few other. Remember, the transfer isn't the only attorneys there.
Yes.
You have the bond attorneys, you have the bond cancellation attorneys. So keep that in mind when you're buying a property. There's not one attorney, there's three.
Yeah.
So if you add your own one, there'll be four sets, which is good, because that attorney can then make sure that the whole process, all three of those attorneys do their job. Mm-hmm. And you can register within, let's say, 3 to 4 weeks as opposed to 6 to 12 weeks.
Very interesting. This very weekend that just passed, it was reported in Times Live that the Gupta family tried to buy out a neighbor for $6 million. And apparently the neighbor was the one that was complaining about the illegal extensions that the Guptas were making to their home in Sachsenwald. Then the sale collapsed after the Guptas insisted that their lawyers, now they're the buyer, the whole sale collapsed because they insisted their lawyers attend to the transfer, and the seller was insistent that he had the right to appoint his own lawyer. And the buyer even said, the seller said, just get someone to supervise, it's fine, but the sale fell through as a result of that, apparently, according to the report.
That's stupidity.
It is, isn't it? But the Guptas, they wanted to call the shots on this one. They said, we want our lawyers. The reason, and I don't know about Natal, KZN, but the reason that I as a seller want my lawyer to attend to the transfer is I want my money as quickly as possible. I want no undue delay. And if it is handled by the buyer's lawyer, these things are out of control, and he can delay it. Anything can happen.
But also, you want to secure your money. If you get a million rand payout from your property that you sold, you want an attorney that you trust to handle your money.
Yeah.
You want to be sure that when that property registers, that you'll get your full million rand, and that attorney will not fly to Greece overnight with your money.
Mm. Well, it may not just be to Greece, it could be anywhere. What about interest? If you're a lawyer as well, you have a trust account and your state agent account, let's talk about the interest that's paid to your lawyer's account in trust, the deposit that's sometimes held there you invest it on interest, don't you?
Yes, we have to.
Who gets the interest on that one?
The client. What happens there is we have our trust account, then we have sub-accounts for our clients. So the money is paid into the main trust account, and then from there it's distributed to Section 78 little investment accounts.
Yes.
So the interest in those accounts go to the clients.
Okay.
If I, for example, forget to...
You've got to have permission to invest it, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. If you don't get that permission and you hold the money in trust, who gets the money?
The interest goes to the Law Society.
The interest,
immediately.
Yeah. That's what supports the Fidelity Fund for lawyers, that interest.
Indeed, it does.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about... we have three postings on Legal Talk concerning neighbors. And this one is really making people mull. Good morning, says Dale. What legal steps can I take towards my meddling neighbor? I've informed him countless times to mind his business, but I just can't take it anymore. Please help.
That sounds like me.
Yeah. Do you also have a, you do have a problem. I remember you saying there's a problem with upstairs or something. If
yeah. Oh, my word.
This meddling neighbor, I may be incorrect on the facts, but I think the neighbor listens in to conversations this lady's having with her friends, and it's a bit of a problem. Hector as well, he writes in, my neighbor left me a note complaining about my son who has band practice on Tuesday nights. And, yeah, he has a problem with this one. What does the law say, he says, and what are my rights? I don't even know how to start to approach this, playing a band or band practice until 10 o'clock at night. And then the last one lines, then you can talk. Tessie, she says, good evening, everyone. I'd like to find out, our neighbors asking us to put the sound softer. Our sound is soft, but still it's too loud for our neighbors. We don't know what to do if we put the sound soft. We can't hear the people's voices on TV. If they call the cops, can we get into trouble? We don't do parties and play music loudly. Who wants to take this one?
No. That one of the band, yeah. I fully support. Rather get the cops, let them come there and measure the bezel, whatever they call them, and really assess. But beside, I think they need to be considerate. You can't really be practicing on a Tuesday night until 10 o'clock. People have to go to work. People need to sleep. People need to rest. And as a result, I really think people need to be considerate. But the other regard to the noise level, that one it's a bit tricky because we don't know whether it is just like a powerful sound system that is actually built in house, and as a result people tend to get carried away and they try to increase the volume, yet they keep telling you no, it's not too loud, it's actually within the parameters. But I really think they need to be considerate as well, just so that we work together as neighbors. Be considerate of me, I'll also be considerate of you. If you're going to have a movie night, by all means, blow it. Let us know just so that we can actually give you space. The same way as actually having a party and you don't inform your neighbors and all of a sudden now cars are actually blocking their way. That's a bit irresponsible and inconsiderate.
What do you say, Guillaume?
On the first one, with the meddling neighbor,
yeah,
I would say get an interdict.
Yeah.
Prevention of Harassment Act.
Yes, excellent.
That would be my answer there. Mm. On the second one...
Just on that very note, you can go to any magistrate's court, not any, you've got to go where the conduct is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's happening in Pretoria, you go to the Pretoria Magistrate's Court. And you ask for an interdict in terms of the Harassment Act, and harassment means a person engaging in conduct that can cause harm, and harm is defined as mental, psychological, physical, or economic harm.
Mm.
So it's mental harm if somebody's blowing this...
No, she's definitely not... She doesn't have her wits about her, this woman.
Yeah. You must be careful that that your facts are properly set out when you go to the magistrate's court. You must have... What I would do is have recordings, take pictures, have your evidence at your fingertips, because... Otherwise, you can get blown out of court here and you can lose. It's quite hard to prove a noise. You know, to you, it's a very subjective thing. To you, it may be noisy. To me, it's an everyday kind of sound. There are noise regulations, and I think we know about that one.
Seven decibels.
Yeah. Lines, do you remember the show we did?
Exactly.
Let me just play what one of our guests came into our studio a few months ago, and she... I mean, this went to the High Court on this one. This is the noise they had to live with. That's the crowing cock that Lionel likes to hear about. Our guest on that show on the 7th of March, please listen to that podcast if you can. It went all the way to the High Court. They had to eventually, I think they got the neighbors to concede it, but that was only after they spent many, many thousands trying to get some kind of court order to block this noise. The roosters were right under just
next to their bedroom,
next to their bedroom window.
Yes.
This poor woman suffered serious harm. She was ill as a result of this. This went on for years, and the roosters were there constantly until they got this court order. Yeah.
Sorry, Gary, before we carry on, if I go to the magistrate court, because I know people now financially are a bit constrained, does it cost money if I can do it myself?
Absolutely nothing.
Oh, perfect.
The Harassment Act gives you
That's right.
In the old days, the Harassment Act came in 2014. Prior to that, it was the Domestic Violence Act.
Okay.
So you had to be in a domestic relationship. You didn't have to be married. You could be living together, whatever. But now, anyone who is being harassed on anything, mental, psychological, physical, economic harm that they may be suffering, they can go to the magistrate's court. And the way it works, Lines, is that you file an affidavit and the magistrate gives you an order without hearing the other side. So if you say somebody's doing this, that and the other, he'll give you an order, if your evidence is good enough, to interdict them from doing it. And then they've got to come back to court at a future date and say why they aren't doing it or whatever the facts are.
Okay.
So you get what they call an ex parte order from the magistrate.
Okay.
Evidence must be good, though.
No, with a return date.
With a return date, absolutely.
No, that's great, because people don't have the money to really afford a lawyer, because most of the time lawyers are quite expensive. So if you can do it yourself, even better.
Listen, the magistrates take these things very seriously, especially on the domestic level. But if there's a danger, we're just veering off slightly now, but if there's a danger that you are in harm or someone is about to harm you, please use this act, Protection from Harassment Act, where you get a protection order.
And the magistrates here are very approachable, I've found, in this specific jurisdiction.
Yeah.
They're very accessible.
The law that governs noise is the Noise Control Regulations in terms of the Environmental Conservation Act of 1989. So if there's a noise, if the band is playing and all the rest, there are measures to determine how loud it is. You mentioned decibels.
7 decibels.
Yeah. What they do is, I mean, this is the law, the Metro Police go out and they've got, someone's there has got the equipment to measure the sound. And if it exceeds it, then they can fine you or they'll tell you to stop. And if you operate or play a radio or TV set or drums or musical instruments loudly, there is a fine. I think it's small, but R500, whatever. But, you know, you will be found guilty of something and it goes against your record. So be very careful.
Yeah.
So anyone, excuse me, that is under pressure from their neighbors and there's a noise, please use this phone, Metro Police. They have a special number that you can dial. I don't have it offhand, but they will send someone out.
Cool.
We've used this one before. Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Are you enjoying this, Lions?
No, I am, but I'm just thinking about the Metro Police. I bet you if you were to call them and call Debonairs would be there before they
come. They're catching up, hey? The JMPD is catching up.
Great.
They're getting there. Slowly, slowly but surely.
Okay, well, that's a good sign. We're going to talk about evictions a little later because that's a long and lengthy one. Let's just move on here. Is there, someone asked, Olivia, and this is quite often asked of me, a lawyer, and it may be asked of you, Guillaume. It comes from the olden days where people used to pay a lawyer so much a month. You remember that?
Yes.
Well, you're too young. And what happened was they knew that if they had to get a lawyer quickly, then you had money for them and you would come out. She says, is there a specialized association law firm you can pay a monthly fee to that specializes in handling tenant evictions if you ever need it? No LegalWise or any of those other legal insurance companies.
Well, I split that question I split up in two.
Yeah.
Especially with in-case fees. So I split it up in a deposit,
yes,
and then an actual retainer. Now, the difference is a retainer is an agreement between you and one of your clients where, yeah, they pay you monthly, mm, irrespective of whether they're going to use your services or not.
Yep.
You need to enter into a retainer agreement with that client, mm, and the money they pay you every month goes directly to your business account. It doesn't have to go to trust.
Yeah. And they can call on you whenever they need you. It's, yes, a retainer. You're there kind of...
They can phone you at, yeah, 2 o'clock in the morning. You wake, yeah, up and you go.
Yeah.
And then the other one is a deposit, mm, where they pay a deposit of, let's say, 50,000 rand into your bank account for a divorce. Mm. You can't immediately use that money.
Yeah.
You can't fee it to your business account immediately. You have to fee as you go along.
Yes. Mm.
So that's what I understood there with the in case monthly fee.
Yeah.
It's the retainer that, yeah, goes to business. And then the deposit that goes to the trust account and it's feed against.
Lance, if you talk to your granny, is she still alive?
No, unfortunately, yeah, she passed on.
If you talk to any of your old folk and you say, did you ever pay a lawyer so much a month? It was very, very common in those days.
Oh.
That's before they had the legal wises and the insurance companies. They would pay the lawyers. I think that's where this whole thing of legal wise and legal insurance came from.
Oh, no, that's great.
People paying in advance in case they would need an attorney. Today, if anyone asks me that question, I say, do yourself a favor. Open a bank account, a savings account. Put in 100 rand, whatever you want to a month. And if you ever need to get a lawyer, there it is for you.
That's far much better, I
guess. That's a very good idea.
Absolutely. Tanya wants to know, what is the shortest period for which I can draw up a rental agreement? Does it need to be 12 months lease or can it be, for example, 3 months?
It doesn't matter. It can be for 1 month.
Yeah. The question, Guillaume, is the lease doesn't have to be in writing either.
It doesn't have to be in writing, but if it's not, it's very stupid not to have it in writing.
Yeah.
I would always tell my clients, have everything in writing. Every contract, every agreement, have it in writing.
Do you know that a suretyship has got to be in writing?
I know that now.
Section 6, I think, off the top of my head, of the General Law Amendment Act. In other words, if you come along and say, hey, I'm the father of Lionel, I will stand good for his rent, don't worry, and I even send you an email confirming it's not good enough.
Hmm.
You have to sign a surety.
Now I know.
Yep. So anyone who's going for sureties, please make sure they're always signed by the surety, otherwise they're worthless. I had a client years ago who had many, many stores in the furniture business, and he arranged with the landlord to get a certain shop in a shopping center. The landlord, they agreed the terms, they agreed the period, they agreed everything, and then the landlord pulled out, and he spoke to me about it. I said, there's such a thing as a verbal lease. If you've agreed the important points, the salient parts of a lease, like the rent and the period and all the rest, then there is a lease.
Mm.
And we applied to court to ask the court to make the verbal agreement an order of court. Yeah, and we succeeded. Doesn't have to be in writing.
It doesn't, but it's a very good idea to have it in writing.
Yeah, silly not to, because you need to cover all the points we're discussing today.
True that. Sorry, Gary and Mr. Lawyer, I just wanted to find out the lawyer that you keep referring to, if I'm a buyer or a seller, are you referring to a conveyancer, as somebody who's qualified within the property space, or can just any, it can be any other lawyer? Because I really tend to think that maybe going to somebody who's a specialist, let's say in property or a conveyancer, would far much know how to go, how the transactions work and what processes are actually going to be seen in the future.
That's a darn good question. In the lawyer's field, we have attorneys, notaries, and conveyancers. Okay, a conveyancer is the lawyer lines that does the transfer. Guillaume, are you a conveyancer?
I'm a notary.
You're a notary. Okay, so within your firm there are conveyancers.
Yeah, we have two conveyancers.
And they're the people that have got to sign the documents and actually present them at the deeds office. It's got to be a proper conveyancer.
Okay.
There's a different course, an extra course that he needs to pass and in order to qualify as a conveyancer.
Okay.
Notaries notarize documents. They
commission of oath.
No, no, we all lawyers,
of us are commissioners.
All lawyers
okay.
are commission of oaths. Yeah.
Oh.
Notaries, you people sign prenups.
Prenups.
Yeah, antenuptial contracts.
Also very important.
Signed. Yeah, absolutely. That we're going to keep for our show on matrimonial prenups.
Oh, I'm going to be there. Hopefully, I'll find.
You'll be here, Lance. Let's talk about. Here's one. Comes from Maglo, MAGLO. Good evening, folks. Was written at night. Is there something I can do legally to force my neighbor to cut his trees that have grown into my property? The trees are causing damage to my property, and I had a discussion with him, being the person next door, I guess, and he told me that it is my responsibility to cut the trees. He's refusing and just ignores my calls. Please help. Please help. Yeah.
He has to minimize his risk so that...
Who's he?
The
one who's...
The neighbor.
The one who's complaining or the one who's got the...
The one who's complaining.
Yeah.
He has to minimize his risk.
So what must he do?
Cut it down.
You
the branches.
If the branches are overhanging onto your property, you can cut them down?
You may cut them down. The branches still belong to your neighbor, but you may cut them down.
And what do you do once they cut down? You give it back? Throw it over the wall?
Yeah, it is. He can take it. If he doesn't want it, then...
He's got a tree that's 300 years old. You can cut. It's overgrowing. You can cut it and...
Cut it.
Just I guess sure you would have to give him notice.
But in this specific scenario, he said, we already spoke, and he said no. So if you've spoken to him, then minimize your risk. Take off all the branches that are bothering you and knock on his door. Tell him you have his branches. He can take them. Or you will dispose of it yourself.
There's a famous case of Fuchel versus Krug, C-R-E-W-E, if anyone wants to look it up, 2004 case. And here neighbors shared a wall separating the two properties. And one of the neighbors complained that the neighbor's trees and the root system were causing damage to the wall, which is a common problem. Mm. And they were a nuisance because leaves were falling into his swimming pool, blocking the gutters and obstructing the sewage system. So what he did was he applied for an urgent interdict to have the tree cut down. And the court held, and this is important, that the test for whether a set of circumstances constituted a nuisance to get an interdict was an objective test based on what is reasonable. It's not subjective, not what's reasonable to you, what the average person would regard as reasonable. And the court stated that there is a need to accept a certain degree of inconvenience from trees in return for the shade that they provide. And you've got to really weigh up the benefit. You've got to weigh it against the benefit and the nuisance. And in this particular case, the application to cut down the trees was refused.
Wow.
So you won't always succeed. The court said, well, it's a beautiful tree and it creates shade and so on. Yeah. There are so many cases on this.
Sorry.
Williams, yeah, go ahead, Lance.
Could that case be appealed, for example? Because I would simply say, I'm spending so much money and this is financially constraining my pocket. And as a result, I really just feel that it's just doing injustice.
The court absolutely hate these spats, if I can call it, arguments between neighbors. Mm. The court hasn't got the time to concern itself with nonsense. And the courts feel, and I say nonsense, inverted commas, that these are matters that should be sorted out between neighbors. Love thy neighbor. Sorted out. And the courts have said beautiful wording like this when there's a spat between neighbors. I'm going to quote, "Who chooses to ride a tiger will find it difficult to dismount it unscathed. Much the same can be said of the decision of the parties to indulge in litigation rather than settle their differences in a less acrimonious and costly way." Mm. That is why we always say to you, try and resolve your differences without litigation.
That's a fair point.
Good point. Mm. Yeah. The public health bylaws, also, if you have a tree overhanging onto the pavement, then the municipality can cut them down under the municipal bylaws.
Oh, the public
health
bylaws.
Yeah. Interesting, isn't it?
Very, very. I mean, these things, we take them for granted, but they can be quite a nuisance at times.
Oh, they happen, and they happen a lot, especially in Joburg.
Guillaume, there's something that I need to talk to you about quickly, and I may do, and I think it would be a good idea. I'm going to do evictions on a separate show because that in itself is a minefield.
Yeah.
And it's very concerning how to get people in and out, or get people out of properties the right way to do it, because these are questions that are posted all the time. How do I get a bad tenant out? We need to explain it in detail. We'll spend some time on that on another show. I know you do a lot of conveyancing, and you're a state agent as well, as I said. If I want a bond, where's the best place to go? And we're not punting, we don't get paid for this, but give us an idea.
At the moment, I would say FNB and NetBank are the two banks that give the most loans, or 100% loans. Standard Bank, you're looking at about 80%. Absa will give 100% loan, but only to their own clients. Also, Investec, only to their own clients. So best bet now would be FNB and NetBank.
When you say 100% loan, there's no deposit. You get a full bond for the
first. Full bond without a deposit.
How do you qualify for that?
There's a little calculation. Yeah. You take your salary.
It's creditworthiness and all that kind of
all
stuff.
All that, but yeah. There's a little calculation that you can do yourself to see how much you can afford.
Mm.
It's your salary.
Yeah.
Before deductions, times 3, times 9.65. That'll give you the amount that your salary qualifies you for.
On your website, can I go and check what bond costs, transfer costs, and this calculation that you've just mentioned? Is that available to me?
Yes, it is.
Just give us your website, please.
It's www.nakaniwatts.co.za.
NKANI.
Yes.
Watts, WATTS.
Correct.
Lawyers' fees, I want to know bond costs. It's all there for me. I just put the amount in and it will pop up. Because when people are buying houses, they want to know how much extra, what are the extras. This will show them
Definitely.
What the costs are.
So also, I found that they don't know, they think there's only one attorney present in a transfer. They have to keep in mind that if there's a bond has to be cancelled, a new bond has to be registered, a transfer has to take place.
Mm.
So all of those are extra costs. You have to not only pay transfer costs, but if you have a bond, you have to pay bond costs as well. And the seller will have to pay cancellation fees because he's cancelling his bond.
Yes.
So his bond has to be cancelled as well. So purchasers should keep that in mind as well.
Okay. Someone has written in, Beatrice. She says, I'd like to find out where to lay a complaint against the lawyer if you feel they are not being transparent. And if I may answer that one, the Law Society, we all know that. Please go to their website and hit the tab public, where it says public, and there you will find your right as a client of an attorney. It's all set out for you. Law Society is very strict on that one. Just very briefly, you need to know the lawyer's got to give you a statement of account regularly. So all that kind of stuff is all there for you. Check it out on the website, on the lawyer's website.
But I think also this whole thing about property, most people get into the property game with that understanding that there are going to be monthly fees insofar as the rates and taxes, the levies that are actually going to be incurred. And most people don't think about those. So whenever you do your calculations, you need to pay much attention to that as well. I don't know what you think.
Yeah.
Also pay attention to rates and taxes bills.
Yes.
Make sure there's no outstanding debt from previous owners.
Yes. The other important one is actually making sure that if you don't have an account with your municipal, make it a point that you've got one, because they can hit you with a fine of 30,000 like they did in my case, unfortunately.
What's that, Lance?
Municipal account for your rates and taxes.
Yeah.
I was not paying rates and taxes, but luckily every month I was putting X amount of money into a different account, and the bill came to 30,000 after 4 years.
Oh, I see. You were saving the money.
Exactly.
Somewhere. Okay, good.
So you need to always pay much attention to that, because I realized that as a property owner, I was not informed of such things, and I actually had to learn the hard way. Unfortunately, they'll cut your water and electricity, which is illegal, but they actually
do
that.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that on last week's show as well. Just be careful with that one.
Yeah, to the municipality, when they issue clearance figures, if there's a lot of money outstanding, or money that's been outstanding for 2 to 3 years, they issue you with a 118, section 118 discount. It gives you half the money back, so to speak. So you don't have to pay the full amount to get the clearance figures. I think new owners should just make sure that that full amount has been paid up, so the new owner doesn't sit with a 100,000 rand bill when they move into the new property. And this happens, especially in Johannesburg.
Cool. That's our property show for the week, for the day. It's been good. Interesting. We learned a lot. Lange, you enjoy?
Definitely I did. I learned
fun.
You've been listening to the voice of Guillaume Earl. Your website you've given. Many thanks for joining us today. It was a good recommendation from Legal Talk SA. And thanks to the people that write in with all these questions. Cliff Central listeners, yours are next. Many thanks for listening to everyone. And until next Tuesday.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now. Good.
Au revoir, au revoir, au revoir.
Thank you very much.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life. With Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.